The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses.
Hey, listeners. We want your input on Season 20, which, I have to be honest, does not sound like a real number. What elements of the craft do you want us to talk about? What episode or core concept do you use or reference or recommend the most? Or what are you just having trouble with? After 20 seasons, we've talked about a lot of things. What element of writing do you wish we'd revisit for a deeper dive on the podcast? Email your ideas to podcast@writingexcuses.com.
Season 19, Episode 17. This is Writing Excuses.
Novellas, the Goldilocks of Publishing.
I'm Erin.
I'm Mary Robinette.
And I'm Dong Wan.
And I wanted to talk a little bit in this wild card about novellas, because I feel like as I was coming up in the publishing industry and spec fic, novellas went from like a thing that occasionally showed up in a magazine like Asimov's or Analog to a huge category with actual books that you can buy on the shelves. And I wanted to understand a little bit more about, like, when do you know something should be a novella versus a short story or a novel?
And it's, for me, one of the things that is interesting about it is that it reflects the kind of fashion of writing, because some of the books that I loved most were incredibly short books. And so I feel like for me, what a novella does is that it allows me to go a little bit deeper and more immersive in my world building, take some of those side trips that I want to take that I don't have space for in a short story. But I don't have to sustain an idea over an entire novel. There's this sweet spot where it's got enough other things happening in it that you want to explore, but also you don't want to live there for 120,000 words.
That makes sense. I'll be honest. I, at one point, studied a bunch. Like, I took a few novellas to try to figure out what was inside of them. I did little surgeries on them. And what I found was that there were usually, like, in the ones I'd seen, like 8 to 10 scenes total and like 2 to 3 characters. So I don't know if like that's like if what you and like not really any subplots. It was usually like we're going to follow these 2 to 3 characters on one particular journey over 8 or 9 scenes. And then we're going to kind of wrap. But I'm curious if like you found that when you were writing the novella or Mary Robina or in the ones that you've seen or read in the industry, is that true or were those just the ones?
Yeah, I mean, I think about it in terms of layer cakes is the metaphor I always go back to where like, you know, a short story is kind of like a sheet cake, right? And a novel is like a millefeuille where there's like a million different layers of like characters and subplots and all of these things. And a novella, you know, as the name would imply, kind of falls somewhere in between where you, it's like a wedding cake. You've got a few tiers, just a few layers in here, but it's not so dense that you require the full length of a novel to sort of get that through, right? So there's usually one main narrative thrust, maybe a B plot, maybe a C plot if you're really stretching it. Handful of characters, right? 2, 3, whatever it is. Certainly not more than a couple POVs. I mean, obviously, all these rules can be broken, as with anything that we talk about. But generally, when I am looking at a pitch and or, you know, a writer comes to me, and they're like, hey, I'd like to tell this story. And sometimes I'll be like, this feels a little bit more like a novella. I think you need to complicate this, add other POVs if we want to punch it up to a novel. Or sometimes someone will come to me with a novel pitch and be like, I don't know about this C plot. I don't know about this thing over here. What if we cut that and make it a novella? And it'll be a leaner, meaner version of the story. So for me, a lot of times I am like kind of looking at where it fits in that way. And those, what you're talking about are exactly the levers I'm pulling on in terms of how many POVs, how many plots, those kind of things.
So I have this formula that I've talked about on the podcast before that I use as a diagnostic tool sometimes when I'm trying to figure out like how to do this, which is looking at the number of characters and the scenic locations. And I think that one of the things that I don't account for in that, but that is one of the pieces that tips it from being short story to this novella is is not just the number of characters and locations, because you're right, you can have a novella that's like, you know, this is how you lose the time, where it's really 2 characters. It's a ton of locations.
Yes.
But I think one of the things that a novella has is that there's often a longer timeline than there is in a short story. Not always, because you can have a short story that can span decades. It's just harder to do. But that it is reflected in kind of the number of try-fail cycles. Mm-hmm. So I think of it, again, in the embellishments, the flourishes, that there's just more nuance to a novella than sometimes you can have in a short story where you have to be so constrained and you can't have anything extra there, that you can have some extra bits in there that just make, you know, that are the decorative flourish on the icing.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to flip it a little bit from one way I sometimes talk about it. If you think about, so when we're selling movie rights, right, or selling film and TV rights, a lot of times when it's a full novel, we'll be like, this feels more like a series. There's too much information here to fit into a movie. Whereas a novella is kind of like a perfectly movie-sized little snack, you know what I mean? Because when you're watching a film, you really only have a couple hours to get that across. So the kind of amount of character and content you have in a film is about the right size for what you want in a novella, right? So if you think about the difference between Blade Runner, the movie, and Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, the novel, there's a radically different amount of information and content in those two stories. One is much more laser focused on one major plot line, right? So you can kind of like, it's one way to think about it. You know, we often like to compare things to movies and TV shows on this podcast. So it's funny to like invert it a little bit of like, would this make a good movie? Then maybe it's more novella sized.
I love the way that you're thinking about that, because when you started out talking, I thought you were going to say that a novella felt like an episode of a series to you, because I always think more in television than movies. And I was like, it kind of does feel like I'm thinking about like an episode of Star Trek, mm-hmm. like an episode where a lot is happening, whereas a short story is almost could just be the climactic scene in an episode that has like, it pulls in just enough that you understand who the people are, but it doesn't necessarily have like that part in an episode of a TV show where they're just kind of like, doing their walk and talk from like the West Wing days, where they're kind of catching up a little bit on things that are slightly extraneous to what the story moment is, but help to build out the world of the character a little bit more.
When we sell short story rights, it is often like we have half of a movie or the pilot episode of a TV show, and then we got to do a lot of extrapolation past that. The question we're always answering when somebody is like, we want to acquire the rights for this story is, how do we expand this, right? Versus when we're selling a novel, it's, how do we get this to fit into the container that we're trying to put it in, right? And so that's in part just because this is a conversation I have a lot is how I think about it. But, you know, we all have a lot of familiarity with these forms, so it might be helpful.
As we're talking, I'm thinking about another piece that goes into a novella that does not go into a short story, which is that often novellas have chapters.
Yes.
And that there's a function that chapters have, which is to provide a larger break. Mm-hmm. So a novella has scenes, short stories can have multiple scenes, but you don't see a short story that has like a chapter break. And those represent, for me, a pacing thing.
Yeah.
That it's one of the ways that you control pacing by saying, okay, we're gonna do a real hard line under this important point. We're gonna give you a breather and then we're gonna move on. And in thinking that through as we're talking, I think that part of what the novella has over the short story is room to breathe.
Yeah. Mm. A short story is meant to be read in one sitting, by and large. So you sit down, you read the story. If you leave halfway through the story, you're probably not coming back to it. It feels like something went wrong there, right? Versus a novella, what's nice is you're meant to read it over a weekend or a couple days, over the course of a week, versus a novel, which will take you weeks to months, depending on how fast you read, right? Yes, I know some people read novels in weekends or in a night, but in general, you're thinking about the reading experience. How long do you want people to sit in this world? How long are you expecting them to remember stuff, right? You know, something like This Is How You Lose the Time War. It's a very dense story, and so, but there's a more, you can rely on the reader to remember more because they've probably read it more recently than if that were 150,000 more novel.
Yeah. And I also, the idea of reading that as a 150,000 word novel, I don't think it's sustainable.
Oh, I get tired just thinking about that. Yeah. You know, like, yeah.
Yeah, because form, like one of the things that short stories can do that I always love is play with form.
Yes.
And I feel like novellas still fall into that, where you can do something that you might not want to do forever.
Yeah.
But it's just long enough to be like, okay, I'm okay with looking for a different format or a different type of voice than I would in a long-term novel experience.
That's another thing I'll tell people when they're like, I'm thinking about this idea. And sometimes I'll say, maybe this works better as a novella. If it is high formalist, right? If it is experimental in some way, I'm like, that might overstay its welcome at 200, 300 or, you know, 400 pages. But if you stay under 200 pages, if it's under, you know, 40,000 words, then you can get away with being a lot weirder, a lot more experimental, play with voice a lot more. And when I think on some of my favorite novella reading experiences, they're ones that have been pretty buck wild as a reading experience, right? Like Kaya Shante Wilson, you know, Source of the Wild Deeps is written in this hugely elevated tone, right? That would be so hard to sustain at a greater length. But at that size, I was like, this is delicious. I'm rolling around this, having a great time. Bo Bolander's kind of like that too. The voice of their novella is hard to sustain over that length, but in a small bite-sized capsule is so delicious.
Yeah, you were making me think about Fonda Lee's The Untethered Sky, which is very, it is both epic and very quiet. It's someone who's a falconer, and it would not work as a novel, even though it is dealing with, you know, vast distances, big empire stuff, all sorts of cool things. But it's so intimate and so personal, and that's the reason that you're reading it, that if you tried to do it at a longer length, it would become a totally different book because you would have to put in these really big stake moments in order to keep the tension, in order to keep escalating.
And speaking of escalation, we will do that when we get back from the break.
Hey writers, are you thinking about learning a new language? I think exploring the world, experiencing other cultures, and being able to communicate with people outside your everyday experience lets you create richer, better stories. A great way to do that is with Rosetta Stone, a trusted expert for over 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered. They use an immersive technique, which leads to fast language acquisition. It's an intuitive process that helps you really learn to speak, listen, and most of all, think in the language you're trying to learn. They also feature true accent speech recognition technology that gives you feedback on your pronunciation. It's like having a voice coach in your home. Learn at home or on the go with a desktop and mobile app that let you download and access lessons even when you're offline. And it's an amazing value. A lifetime membership gives you access to all 25 languages, including Spanish, French, Italian, German, Japanese, and, of course, Korean. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Writing Excuses listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing in context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This week, our thing of the week is a role-playing game called Jiangshi, Blood in the Banquet Hall. This is a role-playing game about Chinese immigrant families in the U.S. or Canada who run restaurants and get attacked by vampires. It's very specific, but that is what makes it so interesting. Has an incredibly strong focus on family dynamics and on the process of blending in or trying to fit into a culture that is not originally your own. Role-playing games are most interesting to me when their mechanics directly address the story and incentivize a certain kind of storytelling. And Jiangshi does this beautifully. For example, instead of having stats like strength and constitution and intelligence and stuff, you've got stats for how well you can speak Chinese, how well you can write Chinese, how well you can speak English and write English. And all of these different things really help sell the idea that you are in a culture or even in a family that you don't entirely understand because you come from very different backgrounds. It's an incredibly fun game, has really great horror elements. And again, that's called Jiangshi, Blood in the Banquet Hall.
All right, we are back, and I'm going to escalate by getting down to brass tacks, which is on a mercenary level. Like, in the terms of the publishing industry, are novellas something that we should be aiming for? Can we all get rich this way? novellas, yes, no.
Obviously, we
nice.
Can get
obviously.
Rich from-
publishing in general, great way to get rich. Novellas are such an interesting thing because they've been a category forever, and I've always loved reading them. It's one of my favorite formats, But as a traditional big five publishing option, that is new, right? We're talking in the last, you know, 5-10 years, they have really risen as this thing, primarily because of Tor.com, right? So Tor.com is a sub-imprint of the Tor Publishing Group. It's connected to Tor, the main imprint, but it's its own little thing, right? With its own editorial team, whatever, and it grew out of the Tor.com website. Sorry, this is too much history. But they started a publishing program, and I think to distinguish themselves from what Tor Prime was publishing, they, and because they had done short fiction on the website for so long, they started with shorter works, with novellas. And they were being very experimental on how they were produced, how they were printed, and how they were sold. They were experimenting on lots of different ways with the Tor.com imprint that has eventually settled down to a more traditional model. They're now printing books the same way everyone else does, and they're doing the contracts the same way as everyone else does. But the end result was they published a ton of novellas very quickly that were all from authors who weren't traditionally getting published in other avenues, and were publishing a lot of very experimental fiction. There's a lot of weird stuff in there. You know, both books I just mentioned before the break are Tor.com novellas, right? Neon Young's Black Tides of Heaven is also like a very experimental queer novel or novella that is also published in that category, right? So it was just carving out this exciting little space where some authors got to build really successful careers, right? Martha Wells is a great example of somebody who had a long career publishing, but hadn't quite hit the mainstream success. And then with the Murderbot Diaries, those novellas just launched her to a completely different level in terms of where she's at in terms of publishing. So novellas became viable. That said, only really Tor.com does novellas. Most of the other major imprints don't tend to take them on. It's a little weird in terms of how you price them and how you sell them. And then they just weren't used to doing shorter fiction, especially in genre fiction. So, you know, when we pitched This Is How You Lose the Time War, we were pitching to a lot of publishers, and it was a little bit of a struggle with most of them who couldn't really imagine doing something that short, right? So obviously there are things that have worked very, very well in the novella space and done enormously, have sold a lot of copies and been very commercially successful, but that is still viewed as a fairly difficult thing to pull off. So the short answer is, I wouldn't advise going into it to get rich. However, there's a cool opportunity of a very innovative publisher who's willing to take on novellas that may not get a shot at, in other venues.
And I find one of the things as you were talking like, that I find interesting is that there's kind of two different modes that you can sell a novella in. You can either sell it in this this thing where it is considered a standalone book and you have a book publishing contract. Mm-hmm. And then you can sell it as a short story, which you don't get royalties on, and it's just a per word rate. Mm-hmm. And they are such different landscapes for also not only the monetary income, but also the longevity of the yeah. piece. If you publish something in Asimov's or any of the magazines that take novellas, it goes out and then it fades away. It vanishes as the next thing comes out. But something that is published in book form, it will stay mm-hmm. it will stay on shelves often.
And it's an interesting trade-off, though. I had a long debate with friends about sort of where's your sort of ideal novella market, because on the one hand, yes, it fades if it goes out in sort of a traditional magazine. But on the other hand, you get the eyeballs of all the people who read that magazine, like, free of charge. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you do it as a book, and, you know, Tor.com has a great marketing arm, but if you do it through like a smaller, there are other smaller mm-hmm. presses that do novellas as well. Like I think Neon Hemlock.
Yeah, I was going to say Neon Hemlock, and Tachyon.
Tachyon. And like maybe it catches fire and maybe it doesn't. And so it lasts forever, hopefully, but like you don't really know if you'll find your audience.
Yeah, and also the rights will get locked, tied down when you mm-hmm. go with the book publishing mode that you, because they stay there. Whereas, you know, I can, anything that I've published as in short story mode, I can send out for reprint. Mm-hmm. I have complete control over foreign rights. And it's like there's negotiation that happens mm-hmm. in other things.
One thing to think about strategically when you're considering publishing a novella with a traditional publisher like Tor.com is to remember that you're publishing a book, right? And we like talking about novellas as their own little category, but at the end of the day, you're publishing a book, and that book is competing with every other book that's getting published, including, you know, Brandon Sanderson 200,000-word epics and literary fiction and Reese Book Club picks, right? You're going on the same shelf with all those things, right? You're not in its separate space where people are showing up to look for shorter content like you would be at a short fiction magazine, right? So a lot of the effort that goes into launching a novella is the same that you would be doing as if you were a debut novelist, right? There's a little bit of like an asterisk if you're publishing a novella in terms of when people are looking at your sales track. If you publish a novella that doesn't blow the doors off, you're not going to be as penalized when you're trying to sell a full-length novel as you would be as if you publish a debut novel that didn't do great. But that's like marginal, you know? So I would encourage people to really think of like, do I want to write a novella? Do I want to write a novel? If you're making that straight choice in terms of, you know, publishing strategy, the math gets pretty complicated.
And I want to also flag that we're talking about these in terms of traditional publishing modes. When you're looking at indie publishing, I think that's one of the other reasons that novellas started to take off is that we were seeing indie publishers who were putting out extremely short novels that were by the award categories, technically novellas, but they were putting out these extremely short novels that people were excited about.
Yeah.
And because you can get in, you can experiment, you can have this tasty snack and then move on to the next thing. And being shorter means you can turn out more of them, which then every time you publish a new book, it makes your backlist come alive. So there's a lot of reasons to pursue learning to write in this Goldilocks zone.
Yeah. I also think there's a little more, this could be wrong. Don't come for me, publishing. But I do think there's a little more risk-taking sometimes in the like small press novella world.
Absolutely.
Where folks who are doing something experimental or maybe coming from like a like they're doing something different with language or structure that isn't what people are used to are being given a shot. And then maybe that helps them to get the book contract. Cause I've seen several people who I'm like, ooh, I love that person. I saw their novella 2 years ago and now I'm seeing their novel. And maybe they would have done that anyway. But I think it also builds up a little bit of your own courage. Plus if your granny is asking you, did you write a book? Where can I find it? And you publish a novella in book form, you can just hand it to her at your next holiday party. And honestly, that's worth a little bit of something.
Oh, it's worth a lot, you know? Yeah. And you know, a lot of my clients are people who started out as novella writers who then we were able to turn around and sell a novel. And in most cases, it was a lot easier to sell that novel because we could be like, hey, this novella won awards. It sold really well, XYZ, right? Like people love it. We got blurbs from so-and-so, right? And that does make it easier to sell a novel, right? I'm not saying it's always a stepping stone, but I've been very lucky with that in my career of being able to turn, you know, whether it's Nino Cipri or Neon Young or somebody like that who had a successful novella and then being able to turn that around and go to a publisher and say, hey, we have a debut novel. Here's what it is. And they're like, oh, we're very excited to do this, you know?
I think ultimately, like, you can't force yourself just for much as I like to talk about the monies. Like, you know, you can't force your idea into a form that it's not, but it is something to think about, like, especially if you're on the edge, like when you're on the very edge, like this is just between maybe novella and short story, I would say. I think it's harder to be maybe just between novella and novel because like, I think there is a big leap in the amount of depth and the amount of content.
Totally.
Something I was wondering earlier is I know, Mary Robinette, you've said that like novels are really about immersion, right? And short stories are about something that's not immersion.
Swift emotional punch is the
Swift
way I just
emotional punch.
Way I describe it. But yeah.
Great. Thank you. I couldn't remember. What would you say? Do you have something like for novellas that has that same put you on the spot for pith?
My pithy. A novella is a short story told with novel pacing.
Ooh. I like that.
It's like I think it really is the combination of the two. There's a clarity to a novella in terms of the emotional journey that it's going to deliver for you. That there's generally, not always, but frequently like one long, beautiful mood that's being built. Whereas novels, you have to hit a bunch of different things. Otherwise, you get kind of taste saturation and you don't have to worry about that with a novella because you're in there for less time. But it does give you a chance to flirt with the immersion. So one of the ways I often describe writing is like a roadmap that you're driving someplace, and then there's these side quests. And if you're running a quick errand, you're going to go to the store, you're going to get the stick of butter, you're going to come back home. And every time you add a task to that, you're there longer. And so when you're doing the short story, you're like, I cannot do any other tasks. I just have to get the stick of butter and get out, because otherwise I'm going to burn everything that's at home. And with the novella, you've got the freedom to do the side quest. You've got the freedom to do the impulse buy and still go and do the journey and then come home. That to me is like one of the things about a novella.
I love this. Like, I'm thinking about like this, like short story, get the butter, the wander the grocery store in the novella, maybe you run into a neighbor, mm-hmm. you know, but you're still in the grocery store. And then in the novel, it like zooms out and the grocery store is just like part of a large city worth of things that you're actually going to be focusing on.
Yeah.
One last thing, I know we're running a little long here, but one more thing I want to add on the publishing side is I'm calling a little bit of a shot, but I've been seeing a trend over time of novels getting shorter. There's been more pressure from publishers to want shorter books. And I think we're going to start seeing this distinction between novella and novel breaking down on the publishing side. And people will just, it's a book. This one's short, that one's long. And I think we're starting to see that more and more of publishers being interested and willing to publish things that are shorter and shorter. You know, things around 60,000 words and under has been very common in the literary fiction for a long time. So I'm seeing that trend even lower as we see people with an appetite for quick reads, slimmer books, things like that.
So I think you are absolutely right. And this gets back to what I was talking about right at the beginning about fashion. Fahrenheit 451, we all agree this is a novel, right? It is 46,000 words. And that's a novella.
Yeah.
That's like, by modern standards, that is a novella. It has tipped just over.
It's just over the line, but yeah.
Just over the line for award categories. But when you think about a lot of those golden age books.
They're short.
They're really short. And I think one of the things for the ones, especially the ones that have stuck around, I think one of the reasons is because they're short, because mm-hmm. they're the novella length. And it's this opportunity to play.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
All right. Let's give you an opportunity to play with some homework. So take a short story that you either love or that you've written and just make a list of things that you might add if you were going to turn it into a novella. Then do the same for a novel that you've either written or love. And what is a list of things that you might have to take out if you wanted to make it into a novella?
This has been Writing Excuses. You're out of excuses. Now go write. Do you like stars? I do. Maybe you'd like to put up a constellation of stars by rating us on Apple Podcasts. Hello. Yes, we're talking about ratings, not astronomy. But a 5-star review can help us by creating a navigational beacon for new writers like you to find their way to Writing Excuses. So, rate us on Apple Podcasts or your podcast platform of choice. Support for today's show comes from The Inner Loop Radio. If you listen to us because you're a writer, then you'll also want to listen to Rachel and Courtney talk about how to stay inspired, how to stay focused, and how to stay sane. Subscribe now to The Inner Loop Radio on iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, or any other podcasting site. Get inspired, get focused, and get lit on The Inner Loop Radio. Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. For this episode, your hosts were Mary Robinette Kowal, Dong Wan Song, Aaron Roberts, and Howard Taylor. This episode was engineered by Marshall Carr Jr., mastered by Alex Jackson, and produced by Emma Reynolds. For more information, visit writingexcuses.com.
When everyone is on the same page, getting things done is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that enables your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.